Welcome to the Gregory Neesmith Show, a special delivery of underdog stuff. It's also a place we explore how underdogs get their swagger back in today's society and culture. You know, from all the unangles, the unavoidable, the underreported, the unbelievable, the unsaid, the unjust, the unconventional, and more underdog stuff. And as always, topics inspired by current events, some old events, some turnarounds, some that worked, and some that didn't. You know, there's always something to be learned, even in our failures. Also, topics inspired by our personal lives and just a pinch of politics. And to take you on that journey every week, you have your host, Gregory Neesmith, certified coach, business consultant, content creator. And when it's all said and done, into exploring how underdogs rediscover our special stuff and get our swagger back in life and in business. And every episode includes some of your favorite segments, unavoidable news, the swagger back commandments, the un of the week, the unconventional thought, and then we close every show with underdog spotlight. Today's episode 84, it's called Money Talk, aka Cream. Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. It's the 25th anniversary, by the way, of Enter the Wu 36 Chambers Wu-Tang, just as a side note, but a related note, because, you know, today's episode is called Money Talk, aka Cream, because you can't have a conversation about getting your swagger back, going from underdog to top dog, without having a conversation about money. So today, that's what we're going to do, and we're going to cover it from all the unangles. With that, let's kick off the show like we do with the unavoidable news of the week. And it goes and starts off with this, unavoidable news.
We're going to win with every single facet. We're going to win so much, you may even get tired of winning. And you'll say, please, please, it's too much winning. We can't take it anymore. Mr. President, it's too much. And I'll say, no, it isn't. We have to keep winning. We have to win more. We're going to win more. We're going to win so much.
Yeah, we're just going to keep. Do you feel like we're winning? I don't feel like I'm winning. I haven't felt like I'm. I mean, he's winning. Do you feel like you're winning? Because I think a lot of us feel like we're losing, especially with the current president. But he kept saying that we were going to keep on winning. And surprisingly enough, in the news this week, the U.S. economy is growing. The U.S. economy grew its fastest rate since 2014. The GDP was up a little over 4%, which is crazy. Fastest growth rate since 2014. And, you know, Donald Trump's talking about how he's the man. Tax cuts, all types of other things he's doing, rolling back regulations. He's like, hey, we winning. Economy's winning. Economy's growing. And of course, he keeps talking about all of his success. Now, just as a note, though, according to a lot of economists, they believe that this growth won't keep going and that some of the tariff wars and some of the other things affecting the economy will likely dampen all this good news. But as of right now, maybe he's right. We just winning so much, we're going to get tired of it. The economy's growing. And this is a big deal. Why? Because oftentimes they say as Americans, we vote with our wallets and pocketbooks. And so as the midterm elections approach, and a lot of people expect the Democrats to make a lot of waves and win a lot of elections, but when the economy's doing well, sometimes people reward the party that is in power, which is currently the Republicans. So we'll see. Let me know, are you feeling this new economy or not? Because as we talk about money in today's episode, Money Talk, Cream, cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. There's a saying that a rising tide lifts up all boats. Or you've heard another saying like, you know, lace up your boots, work hard, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Economy's growing, so that should mean everybody's growing, everybody's happy, right? all the underdogs are now top dogs because of Donald Trump. But that's not always the case. And I told you, you know, we talk old events, we talk new events, and sometimes I like to tie them together. And just for some perspective about how rising tides can lift all ships, or just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and work hard, especially when all is well with the economy, I just want to remind folks that, as Dr. Martin Luther King once said, not everybody has boots and not everybody has a boat.
White America must see that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. That is one thing that other immigrant groups haven't had to face. The other thing is that the color became a stigma. American society made the Negro's color a stigma. America freed the slaves in 1863 through the Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, but gave the slaves no land or nothing in reality, and as a matter of fact, to get started on. At the same time, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that there was a willingness to give the white peasants from Europe an economic base. And yet it refused to give its black peasants from Africa, who came here involuntarily in chains and had worked free for 244 years, any kind of economic base. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without food to eat or land to cultivate, and therefore it was freedom and famine at the same time. And when white Americans tell the Negro to lift himself by his own bootstraps, They don't look over the legacy of slavery and segregation. I believe we ought to do all we can and seek to lift ourselves by our own bootstraps. But it's a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And many Negroes, by the thousands and millions, have been left bootless as a result of all of these years of oppression, and as a result of a society that deliberately made his color a stigma and something worthless and degrading.
Shout out to Dr. Martin Luther King giving us some perspective that even though things like the economy can be up 4% GDP growing in the second quarter, Donald Trump talking about all we're doing is winning and winning, get so much winning, we'll be tired of it. But let's remember, it's hard to pull yourself up by your bootstraps if you don't have boots. And it's hard for a rising tide to rise all ships if you don't have a boat. Just keep that in mind next time someone tells you about how much winning we're doing and the economy's growing. But, you know, got to talk about money because things cost today. My dad used to always say, you got to pay to play. And things cost money. Money comes up no matter what. I was looking online just to see the average cost of some things out here for all of us that we, you know, might want to participate in or just part of living our lives. I found out that if you want to get three tickets to an NFL football game, parking, concessions, food, averages about $350. Average price of a normal size American flag, about $20. NFL players continuing to protest for better policing, better justice, and to police brutality. Priceless. I just threw that in as an aside. But let's keep going. List of how much things cost in today's world. A wedding, for those of you who want to get married one day, average cost of a wedding, $35,000. Whoa. Average cost to hush money to someone to keep quiet about a sexual affair. This is according to Donald Trump and Michael Cohen, about $130,000, $140,000, $150,000. Things cost money in today's society. Speaking of the midterm elections, average cost of running for a seat in the House of Representatives is about $10 million. That's crazy. Shout out to Miss Ocasio-Cortez, who I believe won the 14th District of New York recently by only spending nowhere near that amount and beating a big-time incumbent who had been in office for a long time. Also, list of other things that cost us money as underdogs out here that you just can't escape it. You may not want to talk about money. We got to. Things cost money. Raising a child in America, average cost, from the time they're born to the time they're 18, $233,000. That's a lot. Also, things that cost money. Getting a permit to protest in D.C. costs about $100 to $200. But hopefully, there'll be a lot of other folks who are out there protesting too. Because speaking of protests, there's a year now of since Charlottesville happened. And I believe there's going to be some white supremacists using that $100-something permit to march in D.C. And I am shouting out all the folks who will be counter-protesting. And that is, of course, priceless. What else? Cost of going to college. Education's important. You go into a private university, it could cost you about $34,000 a year, about $10,000 if you go into a state college. It's a lot of money. How do things cost so much money? Going on a date, you know, underdogs out here dating. Average cost of a date is around $45. Speaking of money, I wonder who should pay for the first date? That's like an age-old question. That's for another show. All that being said, we spend a lot of time here every week talking about how, as underdogs, we get our swagger back and we discover our special stuff in today's society and culture. And I will admit that I haven't had, and we haven't had, a lot of conversations about money. And shame on me. Shame on us, because we're not really having a real conversation about turning things around unless we at least figure out the money piece. Because what gets in our way a lot of times? Time or money? And so today we're not talking about time, but it is time to talk about money. I want to get into one of the Swagger Back commandments that's dead on about this topic. And you know, the Swagger Back commandments are how we really talk about exploring the reset, how we get to find the reset button in our life again and again to get back on track. Because sometimes we get off track. It's my story. It's your story. It's our story of turning things around. It's an underdog's perspective. And you've heard the 10 Swagger Back commandments. One of them is from Front Street to Swagger Back Boulevard. Second is who you're rolling with. Third is stop kidding around. Fourth, refresh your GPS. Six, go out and play. Seven, puff, puff, I'll pass. Eight, spread love. It's the Brooklyn way. Nine, start whenever, but definitely keep going. Number 10, the remix. But the number 5 Swagger Back commandment is cream. So let's talk about it. I want to take a quick detour on this conversation. Ever heard the song? The line, no romance without finance. I want to take a quick second just to talk about our bad relationships. I know I can't be the only one that's had a couple bad relationships here and there. You know, the one you keep going back to over and over and over again. Just want to share a quick story. Make sure that you know that you aren't alone, because I've had one of those reoccurring bad relationships with one of my partners. This one that I just keep struggling with, haven't been able to figure out. She's sometimey. You know, we may see each other every other week or so if I'm lucky. And she's complicated. You know, on Facebook, they have relationship status, single, married, complicated. I would check complicated for this relationship that I've been struggling with for a long time. And I feel like I'm always working for her. Work, work, work. And she never seems to look out for me. But I keep going back again, again, again. I mean, I'm trying to do better. Trying to do better than my parents may have done in a similar relationship that they've had. But you know, sometimes we learn as much as we can from our parents, and that just isn't enough sometimes. And then there's little nitpicky things in this relationship. She uses words that I don't sometimes understand. I'm just like, can't you just keep it simple? You're annoying me with all these words. You know I don't know exactly what they mean. And I get a little aggravated and start blaming her for things in my life, saying that she's the root of all evil. I've even lost family and friends because of this relationship. Can you relate? You ever had a bad relationship? and you know it's not really working out, but you keep going back to it over and over and over again. That's been me for most of my life in this one particular relationship. And that's been the past. And similar to you, I dream of, I'm hopeful for a new relationship. One where we love each other more. One where it's not so one-sided. I want it to be a partnership. I want her to work for me. I work for her. Shoot, I want it to be sometimes where things are working out and we're not even working. And I want to be able to count on her too. Be there constantly instead of sometime. Shoot, even be there to take care of me when I'm old. Ain't that a dream we all have? Somebody to take care of us when we're old. You may be wondering, on a show about money, aka cream, why am I talking about a bad relationship? Well, it's because the relationship I just described was actually a metaphor for my relationship for most of my life to money. You know, sometimes shows up every couple weeks if you're lucky. Working hard for the money, not having money work for you. Blaming money for things, disputes, fights about who owes you this, who owes you that. Money has broken up relationships with family and friends, romantic ones too. Let me know if you can relate. If money was your significant other, how would you describe your relationship with money? Like I said, we're talking money talk today. Cream, cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. Let me know what your relationship has been and what it is going forward. I've started to rethink how I want to have my relationship with money going forward. And with that, I just want to let you know, if you are struggling with your relationship to money, like I have, like a lot of you have, it's okay. It's natural. There was a recent study done called Are We a Nation of Financial Literates or Not? And it talked about financial literacy and how it's a challenge for us as Americans to know a lot about money, regardless of socioeconomic level, race, gender, all that stuff. And they did a poll, three questions, just three simple questions, but they're a light into how much each of us knows about money. And so I'm going to read to you the three questions, because in the study, only 30% of Americans got these three questions right. And I share that to say, if you're struggling with money, like I've struggled with money, you're not alone and it's okay. But before we get out here today, I'll share with you some things that have helped me change my relationship from sometimey to being more consistent, from being a bad thing to being a good thing. Those three questions, authored by Anne-Marie Lazzardi and Olivia Mitchell, are questions that have been on surveys for decades. And so there's a lot of data and a lot of look at how we see financial literacy. So these are the three questions. I'll tell you three questions, and then later in the show, I'll give you the answers, and you let me know. Let's see how many you get right. It's okay if you don't get them all right. Most of us don't, but that doesn't mean where we start is where we're going to finish when it comes to money and cream. Number one, suppose you had $100 in a savings account and the interest rate was 2% per year. After 5 years, how much do you think you would have in the account if you left the money to grow? Three options. A, more than $102. B, exactly $102. C, less than $102. Second question. Imagine the interest rate on your savings account was 1% per year and inflation was 2% per year. After 1 year, would you be able to buy more than, exactly the same as, or less than today with the money in this account? Options are A, more than today. B, exactly the same as today. C, less than today. And the last question of a survey that's been asked for decades, thousands of people, the last question, do you think the following statement is true or false? Buying a single company stock usually provides a safer return than a stock mutual fund. A, true, B, false. Let me know your thoughts on those questions. Do you know the answer or not? And if you don't, it's okay, because only 30% of people got it right. And the numbers are pretty similar around the world. Even in other developed countries, in the U.S., financial literacy has some distinct demographic differences, though. Those facing the most challenges, according to this study that Lizardi and Mitchell wrote, are the young and the old, women, African-Americans, Hispanics, and less educated, and those living in rural areas, basically underdogs. The game ain't set up for us to win sometimes. But in the study, they do say a couple things we can do as underdogs to get more financial literacy for ourselves and for our communities. Two things. At your schools, if you're a parent or if you're currently in school, make a request for a financial literacy seminar, something about personal finance, something about budgeting. Request that someone comes in and talks to you about it and to your other fellow students. And if you're at your job or your local church, the next time people go, hey, what event would you like to have? What do you want us to do? Bring in someone to talk about financial literacy, personal finance. It's hard for us to get our swagger back if we ain't talking about money and at least getting to a stable place with our relationship to it. I want to share five tips, five things that have helped me with money that I want to share with you. And just hopefully maybe one, maybe two, maybe three, maybe four, maybe all five can help you too. One is, leave your partner. And I don't mean literally leave your partner if you have a partner. I mean, well, you might need to leave your partner, but that's a whole separate topic. Leave your partner, meaning that analogy I used earlier in the show about my relationship to money, using the analogy of it being a relationship, being a person. Leave that old relationship behind. Whatever your old blueprint is about money, whatever relationships you used to having, let it go. Leave it. Go find a new one, a healthier one. That's number one. Number two, get a budget. It may sound like it's real simple, but if we don't know how much money is coming in and how much is going out, it's hard to get good with our finances. Get a budget. Number three, lower your cost. I've learned as an entrepreneur, I'm not quite sure sometimes when the next check is coming in and how much money I can make, but I do know I have a say on how much money I do spend. And so look into creative ways to lower your cost. Get a room rental, get a roommate, maybe go back and live at home. Cook more instead of going out. There are ways to lower your costs to help with our relationship to money. Fourth, no free 99. I used to do a lot of things for free because, you know, trying to be a good person, trying to help people out, but that's not helping me out. And it's better to look for a win-win. No more free 99. Negotiate. Never take people's first offer. Also, if you can't get something in money, get it in value. I do a lot of public speaking, and I've gotten to a place where I'm now feeling more confident to actually charge to go speak to people. But sometimes folks are like, hey, we don't have that in the budget. And so my next stance, instead of just doing it to do it, which there's nothing wrong with that if you choose to, but get some value out of it. I now say, hey, can you have a photographer there? Can I get three or more folks to write a review on my website about the speech? Can you also refer me to three more like-minded organizations that might be willing to have me come be a paid speaker, getting value in return. So no more free 99. So free doesn't mean if you can't get money for it, you can at least get some value for it. And then lastly, number five on my five tips about changing our relationships to money, don't listen to me. Yeah, I said it, don't listen to me. It's, you know, finance ain't my lane specifically. I mean, I'm just okay with money, but it's not my lane. Don't listen to me, but do listen to people who this is what they do, like Ash Cash, who is the host of the Ash Cash Show, which is on every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. on WHCR 90.3 FM, The Voice of Harlem, and you can download his podcast on all the popular podcast platforms. Listen to someone like Ash Cash, who this is what he does, a financial motivator. Listen to someone like the Budgetista. Go to Budgetista.com or go to WealthySingleMom.com. These are folks that this is what they do. And if we want things to turn around, we get to surround ourselves with people who are headed in the same direction we are, and that's financial freedom. Let's talk about the under of the week. This is the under of the week. Let me know, is it unjust or just right? It's hard to get a raise out here. Money's tight. So just maybe you might actually do this. Really? Maybe?
More than one third of Americans would give up their right to vote for an immediate raise. This is according to a survey. Workers say they will give up voting, going to the dentist, and watching, oh, for shame, Game of Thrones. Now I know this report's bull. No, I'm kidding. for a 10% raise. A new survey reports. What's more, a raise or your rights? In other words, what's more important to them, a raise or your rights? More than a third of surveyed American workers, 34.98%, say they would give up their right to vote in all elections for life in exchange for an immediate pay increase, according to a new LendEDU survey released Tuesday.
What? What? Under the week. Some of your people, hey, some of them might be you listening right now, said you'd rather get a 10% raise than keep your right to vote. Is this unjust or just right? Is it unjust to give up your right to vote for the pay raise, or you think it's just right? And before you answer, let me just throw in a dose of reality here that according to research, in the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, Gary Johnson and Jill Stein were also running too. I believe it was reported about 100 million Americans that were eligible to vote did not vote in the most recent presidential election. So before you answer whether or not this is unjust or just right, let's just be very clear that a lot of you didn't vote, gave up your right to vote for free, no pay increase. So maybe at least 100 million folks should probably answer, yeah, I'll take this pay raise. Because right now you're out here not voting at all for free. Just throw that out there as a dose of reality, an unfortunate dose of reality, right? But there's more. 35% of people said they would give up their right to vote for a 10% pay raise. 40% of people said they would forego their dental care for 5 years for that 10% pay raise. 50% of people said they would work an extra 10 hours a week for a pay raise. 9% of people said they would give up their children's right to vote for a 10% pay raise. What? And while you may say, well, at least it was only 9%. In that same study, 5% of people said they would eat a Tide Pod for the raise. So that means basically less people would eat a Tide Pod than would actually give up their child's right to vote for a pay raise. Let that sink in for a second. Unjust or just right? I think you know where I'm headed on this one. I think that this is unjust. While I get it, wages have been stagnant. Money is hard to come by. We talked earlier in the show about how much things cost today. 230-something thousand to raise a kid from 1 to 18 years old. $10,000+ just to go to a public state university. $10 million to run for an average House of Representatives race. I get it. $350 to get 3 tickets to a football game that we're not going to because we're boycotting, by the way. But if you went to one in the past, that's how much it would have cost. So I get it. But in the spirit of both, which is this idea of that life doesn't have to be about either or. We don't have to pick between happy or wealthy or love or our careers. I think it's unjust, right? I want a world where there's both. I want people to get pay raises and I want them to keep their right to vote because change comes along the entire spectrum. And while I get it to be apathetic and be like, these politicians don't represent me and they don't look out for me and my vote doesn't count, I'm here to tell you that it takes all of it. It takes protests and it takes votes. It takes community activism. It takes community centers. It takes parenting. It takes all of it. And so let's not give up one of the levers that helps us function as a society and helps us have a shot at getting our swagger back and rediscovering our special stuff in today's society and culture. As a side note, there were some bright sides to the study. 73% of people said they would give up alcoholic drinks for 5 years for a pay raise. 88% of people said they would never watch Game of Thrones again. So there was some bright spots where folks were willing to give some things up to keep their right to vote, as opposed to the other way around, where folks were willing to give up some things that are pretty important, like their right to vote, just for a pay raise. With that, let me know your thoughts, unjust or just right. Just want to end with an unconventional thought and our underdog spotlight. The unconventional thought is this. Money's complicated, right? A lot of things to learn, a lot of things to know, but supposedly, maybe it's not so complicated.
the really good advice is a can fit on a 3x5 index card and is available for free in the library.
That was the voice of Harold Pollack. That's P-O-L-L-A-C-K. And he has discovered or found out that really all this stuff about finance can be summarized in about 9 things that can literally fit on a 3x5 index card. And it's become a pretty big deal since he launched it years ago. It's made him pretty famous and also just a really cool way to summarize some of the things that we all get to know to become more financially literate. And just so you know, the 9 things on that card are max your 401k, buy inexpensive, well-diversified mutual funds, never buy or sell individual stocks, save 20% of your money, pay your credit card balance in full every month, maximize your tax advantage saving vehicles like 529 accounts, pay attention to fees, make your financial advisors look out for you, and 9, promote social insurance programs to help people when things go wrong. Obviously, I did not do that justice in great detail. You should definitely Google Harold Pollack, and the article that I found out about this guy is called 9 Simple Money Rules on 1 Index Card. That was in Forbes.com. So check him out. Supposedly, unconventional thought. Maybe it's not as complicated as the financial world wants us to think it is, and we can learn some things literally just by looking at Harold's index card. Of course, it's not really that easy, but it is a start. With that, we will end today's show with the underdog spotlight. You know, today's episode is called Cream, aka Money Talk. I grew up listening to 90s hip hop, and this year's the 25th anniversary of Wu-Tang Clan's album, Enter the Wu 36 Chambers. Oh my goodness. If you're a hip hop head, then you remember songs like The Mastery of Shadow Boxing, Protect Your Neck, Cream, which is the title of today's show, Bring the Ruckus, Method Man, Shame on the, you know the rest of that title. Just a few of the songs that I will never forget from such a big time album, from such a big time group. And shout out to them. They are underdogs from Staten Island that came up and have stayed together for 25 years, which is hard to do. Some of us can't keep friends for 25 years, let alone friends who are also business partners and intertwined into like all parts of our life. Speaking of Cream and Money, shout out to them for being pioneers in terms of signing a deal as a group, but then making sure that contracts allow them as individual artists to do different projects and sign other deals. So just ahead of their time in terms of how to build a winning team, how to manage the financial side of the entertainment business, and yet still put out great art and great music. And I bring them up also to spotlight them because I don't know if any of you saw their Instagram recently, but they posted some live footage. And they hinted at a tour that they hinted that maybe, just maybe, they're going to celebrate the 25th anniversary with a tour. Just maybe. So maybe this might be happening in a town near you. 1, 2, 3, let's hope that the Wu-Tang actually goes on a tour this fall to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Enter the Wu, which launched November of 1993. With that, we've come to the end of the day's show, episode 84, Money Talk, aka Cream. I'll leave you with my closing thought, which is I got 5 on it. 5 things to consider as you change your relationship with money. 1 is leave your partner. 2 is get a budget. 3, lower your cost. 4, no more free 99 barter. Get some value. Get something in return for the value you add in the world. And 5, don't listen to me. There's other people to listen to, like Ash Cash, like the Budgetista. Find yourself an actual financial resource that can help you get your swagger back. and turn things around in today's society and culture. With that, shout out to all the folks who listen to the show. Appreciate you. All the online comments, all the phone calls. Shout out to the live show producer, Megan, to the podcast editor, Kayla. And as always, I'm going to leave you with my favorite quote. Say it along with me if you know it. Underdogs. Underdogs. Guess what? The podcast is not over. It's not. And there's a reason why the podcast is not over. Because I just remembered that during the live recording, I did not answer or provide the answers to those three questions around financial literacy. And only about 30% of people get all three of them right. And I know a few of you probably wrote down your answers and was like, Gregory, yo, what's up, man? Like, where you didn't give me the answers to the question. The show's over. Like, I'm mad. Like, what happened? So here's an impromptu recording to actually go over those three questions, the multiple choice answers one more time. But I promise this time you'll actually get the answers. Those three questions. Again, suppose you had $100 in a savings account and the interest rate was 2% per year. After 5 years, how much do you think you would have in the account if you left the money to grow? A, more than $102. B, exactly $102. C, less than $102. The answer is A, more than $102. And question one is really around the concept of compound interest. This idea of as money grows, you get a return on it year after year after year. You make money on top of the money and top of the money that you've made. And this compound interest is a wonderful thing. And oftentimes that's why they say someone, if they keep putting money into a savings account or into some type of 401k, and over time that money can grow. So by the time a 20-year-old is ready for retirement, the reason why there's likely to be a lot of money in their account is this idea of compound interest. Number two, the question was, imagine the interest rate on your savings account was 1% per year and inflation was 2% per year. After 1 year, would you be able to buy more than, exactly the same as, or less than today with the money in this account? A, more than today. B, exactly the same as today. C, less than today. The answer is C, less than today. And question number two is really around the concept of inflation and purchasing power and this idea of our money needs to be growing at a certain rate just to keep up with the growing rate and cost of living and inflation. And so number two is really around the concept of inflation. And the last question from early in the show during the Swagger Back Commandments segment when we were talking about financial literacy, the third question was, do you think that the following statement is true or false? Buying a single company stock usually provides a safer return than a stock mutual fund. A, true. B, false. The answer is B, false. You've heard that saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Also, it's a lie when a lot of folks are telling you that they can pick stocks and they can pick winners and losers. In the end, it's statistics prove this out more often than not, that just buying something that mirrors a basket of stocks, a range of companies over time outperforms trying to pick the best company all by itself. Because, you know, you pick one thing and something goes wrong, then shoot, all your money could be gone, out of here. So those were the answers to those three questions. If you got all three right, you are in a very small percentage of people. Only 30% of folks surveyed both in the U.S. and around the world get all three right. However, it's all good. It's understandable if you didn't get all three right. Why? Because what financial literacy class did you have in 6th grade or in 12th grade or in college? Probably the same amount that I had in the Philly public school system in the college I went to. Zero. Nilch. Nada. I am a believer that as we know better, we do better. We all are where we're at when it comes to this thing called financial literacy and personal finance. And the good news is, as we go on this journey to get our swagger back in life and in business, one of the places we get to do that is when it comes to our money. And I just wanted to take this episode really to have the conversation and remind us that a turnaround conversation isn't a real one unless at some point you're having a conversation about money, finances, your means. With that, as always, I appreciate you listening to the show. This was just a little bonus clip
for episode 84 of Money Talk, aka Cream. Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar bill, y'all. With that, I leave you with my favorite quote. Underdogs, can't nobody do it. I mean nobody. Can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace.